Football Weekly Extra.
Set Mangle to maximum and let's squeeze a few more drops from this season with Football Weekly Extra. Today, the transfer market has begun and that means more poaching than you can shake a slotted spoon at. Kaká's off to Madrid in a vortex of cash, while Barry makes the hastiest Villa exit since OJ in his white Bronco. With Europe's top stars switching homes like Hazel Blears, your pod asks, who's next? Elsewhere, there's World Cup qualifiers. FIFA ho-hum, and Fabio Cabello's Englishmen are facing Kazakhstan and Andorra. Yep, us neither. But there are many, many other interesting fixtures elsewhere, including must-win clashes for the likes of Bulgaria hosting Ireland and Carlos Queiroz's Portugal in Albania. Anyway, details to follow as we bring you all of that plus your post in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everybody. Special early pod with a particularly expert cast of football types. So we have Paul Doyle.
Jesse.
Hi.
Sorry, James.
Yeah.
Hi.
Rob Smythe.
Hello.
Hi, Rob. Nice to see you. Jonathan Wilson.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. We thought that there wasn't much happening this week, but you've already, just while we were warming up the mics, been reeling off interesting facts and figures about the international games.
I'm off to Zagreb on Saturday.
Of course you are.
Croatia v Ukraine.
A wise choice. Well, there's plenty of other delights to come. Sean Ingle posting in saying, who is the biggest football anorak between Rob Smythe and Jonathan Wilson? And how exciting are the conversations they have when they're watching DVDs of old football matches together? Well, what is this? What, you watch football matches together?
I'm absolutely flabbergasted to be, A, to be called an anorak by Ingle, yeah. And B, to...
But one, he tells me that you buy old football games on DVDs off the internet or something, yeah? And then you sit there and watch. Do you dress up in like brown leather jackets and kind of? Is it kind of Life on Mars style?
I'm going to kill it, Gordon.
Right. This is
it is purely, true, though.
Purely for research purposes.
Right.
Valentine's Day this year was a particularly triumphant occasion. Oh, two legs of Red Star v Bayern from 1991.
Yeah.
There's a lot of booze to wash that one down.
Oh, Lord.
My word. Well, there you go. Let's move swiftly along. Sorry.
No, I was just going to ask about a match that these guys may have seen.
Right.
From the 1954 World Cup.
Morocco-Bulgaria, yeah?
You look quite hungry.
The Austria-Switzerland match. I was reading recently about the strange case of Roger Bocke, I think his name is.
Yeah, what was strange about his case?
Well, he was Switzerland's best player of the year. And ahead of the quarterfinal, apparently just a couple of days before the quarterfinal, his doctor gave him the results of some tests that he'd undergone recently before and told him he had a brain tumour. So this obviously wasn't the sort of news he wanted to hear on the eve of a World Cup quarterfinal, but he decided to keep it to himself anyway, deciding he might as well go ahead and play the match. And Switzerland raced into a 3-0 lead. And midway through the first half, apparently poor Bocke copped an elbow in the head during a challenge. Spent the rest of the half wandering around in a daze. By halftime, the score was Switzerland 4, Austria 5. And his teammates were a bit puzzled as to what was going on. He came into the dressing room and said, come on, lads, only 45 minutes away from the semi-final. We've got to hold on to this 3-0 lead. And... they twigged that there was something afoot, and but these were the days before substitutions.
No,
so he had to go out and play the second half, and they lost 7-5,
and he celebrated all night.
I don't know what happened thereafter. I've been meaning to check it out, but I haven't had the time. So I was.
You don't know what happened.
It's due in the post tomorrow, so I'll get back to you next week.
But you don't know what happened to this player.
No.
All right.
No.
Well, if any Swiss-based
listeners... I hope there's a happy ending to this.
Right. We do have a Swiss-based listener, or certainly a listener who keeps urging us to talk about the Swiss League, so perhaps if he can supply any details on that. Amazing story, Paul. Thanks. Sadly, that's about as good as it gets today, because what else have we got? Transfer window stuff. Big story, Ricky Kaká, €65 million, or something like that, and a late bid to snatch him away from Real Madrid by Chelsea. Quick word on this, Jonathan?
It doesn't entirely surprise me. I mean, if it really is true that Abramovich has rediscovered his passion for football after the Scolari of Hiddink really has rekindled that, then I guess a kind of big marquee signing might be might be the kind of thing he
but
wants.
But do you think it's good in football terms for Real Madrid?
For Kaká to go to Real Madrid? Yeah. I mean, if you're going to, given the way their elections work, if you're going to bring in a big name to kind of kickstart a revolution, then yeah, he's one of the two or three biggest names.
Is there a danger that because we don't see much Serie A over here and we get carried away with Messi and Ronaldo that we've forgotten just how good he is? He's an extraordinary player, and surely, like, as you say, he'd be a great way to kickstart a revolution.
He's been patchy, actually.
Really?
In the last 2 years, I would say he's been patchy, yeah. But there you go. Anyway, so let's find out from Sid Lowe in Spain if this deal has gone through now for Kaká, if it's still possible that Chelsea could weigh in and snatch the player away to Stamford Bridge. Hola, buenos dias, Sid.
Hello, how are you?
Sid, this is Football Weekly, just in case you were confused. This isn't Five Live or any of those other people. This is football. You remember when you were back when you were just, yeah?
When I was just a nipper.
Indeed. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. Very hot, but apart from that, it's all right.
You are hot, aren't you?
No, it's not that I'm hot, it's that it is hot.
All right, OK. Listen, Sid, everybody's been talking to you about the Kaká move to Real Madrid. And they've probably been asking questions like, is it definite? Can Chelsea still get in and snatch this player away?
Well, saying something's definite always makes me slightly nervous in a situation like this because, believe it or not, I'm not actually inside the negotiations. I'm not in the room with Florentino Perez and Adriano Galliani and Bosco Leite and everybody else. But what I am being told is that Real Madrid, and this is the crux of this, Real Madrid believe it's done. And also so do Chelsea. Chelsea believe it's done in so much as Chelsea think their chance has gone. Now, obviously, until such time as everybody says, here he is, in a Real Madrid shirt, smiling, beatifically, I just think I've just made up a word, or at least said a word very badly, for the cameras, then we're all going to be thinking that maybe there is a slight doubt. But Real Madrid believe it's done, Chelsea believe their chance is gone, and sources in Italy believe it's done as well, and that the only thing that we're waiting for is for a formal announcement, because it doesn't much do Silvio Berlusconi any good for the announcement to happen just yet.
Because the European election's coming up.
He happens to be a politician as well, yeah.
Mm.
As well as you say, and all those other things that he is.
Now, all sorts of questions about this. I can think of three that I want to ask you straight away. First of all, is this just the start and who's next?
It is just the start and who's next? Any number of players.
Well, I really want you to do is give us the Real Madrid 11 for next season, to the best of your knowledge.
To the best of my knowledge, you see, I think this is really problematic. And the reason I think it's problematic is I actually think that Florentino Perez may go too far. He believes he has to do a revolution at Real Madrid. And I think he might throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think he might get rid of too many players. But given the players that he seems to be after, there's a chance that next year's starting 11 for Real Madrid will be Iker Casillas in goal, Sergio Ramos at right back, Pepe and one other at centre-back, and I do expect them to buy a centre-back despite the fact they've got a guy called Garay, the Argentinian, coming in the summer, who they bought last year but loaned out to Rafting. Left-back, they don't want Gabriel Heinze. I'm not surprised. He's absolutely useless. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if they made the move at some stage for Gael Clichy, who is someone that Jorge Valdano, the new director-general, is very keen on. Then, assuming they're going to play 4-4-2, which is what Manuel Pellegrini, the coach, has always done, across midfield, if they get their men, you'd be looking at Cristiano Ronaldo on the right-hand side of midfield, Lassana Diarra with Xabi Alonso in the middle. And here's the question mark. Iron Robben on the left-hand side of midfield. I think they want to sell Robben. And so in which case, they would rather it was Frank Ribery on the left-hand side of midfield. Up front, Kaká behind one other. Now, of course, there'd be nothing really wrong with them playing with Gonzalo Higuain, but they will go for a striker as well. And then you're looking at either Diego Forlán or David Villa, if, of course, they get all the men they're after.
All right. Well, that's certainly thrown up a couple of other questions. One, you mentioned the manager, Manuel Pellegrini, who's been at Villarreal, where he's overachieved incredibly with not a spectacular lineup, although there's been some big names in there, but nothing to compare to the egotastical conglomeration of megastars that you just described.
No, and that's the thing lots of people are talking about, is to what extent can he deal with the stars? Now, very interestingly, I spoke to Robert Pires, I mean, this is a long time ago now, and this was well before anyone thought that Pellegrini was going to Real Madrid, but about Pellegrini and what kind of coach he is. And Pires said he had a lot of the Arsene Wenger about him, that he's very, very communicative, very good at dialogue with players, very good at making players feel comfortable and confident. And one of the big successes of Villarreal is that they create this kind of ecosystem which is perfect for players. You know, they live very comfortably, they were very well paid, they had a coach that was a thinking coach rather than someone who bawled and screamed and shouted at them, although I know one player, for example, I remember telling me that he went absolutely bonkers after a 4-4 draw with Atletico Madrid because one of his players refused to commit a professional foul that would have preserved a victory for them. And so he's a coach that's kind of set up a very, very nice environment. The problem is that's a nice environment partly because they've got a genuinely nice bunch of players at Villarreal without the egos that could possibly be a problem at Real Madrid and certainly have been a problem before. The other key factor, and the thing that Robert Pires said that I think is very significant, Villarreal for all of these last few years have played completely and utterly without pressure. And the very few occasions they've had pressure, they've actually folded a little bit, or they've appeared to fold a little bit. I think it's a little unfair to say that they just can't take it, but on occasions it's looked that way. And then, of course, we know that if one thing Pellegrini's going to have now that he didn't have before, it's pressure. Mm. It's media attention and it's people on top of him.
All right. Well, OK, Sid, now, how will Barcelona respond to all of this?
Well, Barcelona, I think, are quite keen to not respond in so much as they don't want to be led down the garden path of what Real Madrid do. You know, they've just won the treble. They're a fantastically good team. They recognise that they've got flaws in the squad and problems in the squad, but they don't want what Real Madrid do to cause them to panic. The last Barcelona president who did everything that he did on the basis of Real Madrid was, of course, Joan Gaspart, who just lost Luis Figo to Real Madrid and wasted all of the money from Figo on a whole load of players who did very, very little for Barcelona, amongst them, of course, Petit and Overmars, who we bought from Arsenal at the time. So Barcelona aren't going to respond to Madrid as such, but there are things they need to deal with. They want a striker, they want a left-back, and they want to try and increase their squad. Guardiola has been very clear that he thinks the squad is too short, and if you look at the way they were running on empty towards the end of the season, despite playing very well, I think he's absolutely right.
All right, well, listen, final question from me, in case anybody wants to chip in. No? No? Okay, Sid, listen.
It's good to know they're all riveted.
No, I thought that was excellent. Anything, producer Ben? No, okay. All right, well, Sid, thank you very much for that. Listen, we're not podding on Monday. It's true, okay. Listeners. We're not. Oh, yeah, Rob's coming with a question. Come on, Rob.
Sid, last time there was all this talk of Zidane's and Pavons. Does he care about the Pavons this time?
He's talking a lot about the Pavones this time as well. Yeah, what Perez has said is that we need to have youth team players because they have identity. And what he's going to do, bizarrely enough, and this is almost a contradiction in terms, he's going to buy some Pavones. He's going to buy back Esteban Granero from Getafe, who was a Real Madrid player, went on loan to Getafe. He's going to try and buy back Alvaro Negredo, although I think that there's a very good chance that that Negredo will then be moved.
That's Estella just letting you know that TalkSport are on the other line and if you could just wrap it up. Yeah?
Exactly. Yeah. She's
come on, Sid.
Yeah. So they'll try and buy back Alvaro Negredo. Well, I think there's a very good chance that Alvaro Negredo will then be used as part exchange for another player. And also there's a possibility of them going for Juan Mata, who's the guy at Valencia. He does want youth teams, but of course I think he recognises that they made a mistake last time of singing the praise of youth teams and bringing them in too soon. The one that really made me laugh back then was there's a guy called Ruben, who was a centre-back, and I don't think it would be too unfair, maybe a little bit, but too unfair to say he was bloody rubbish. Florentino Perez told us all that he was the new Fernando Hierro. Well, 38 minutes into a 4-1 kicking from Seville, Carlos Queiroz took him off, put him on the bench. On the bench, he was crying his eyes out. He'd been torn apart by José Antonio Reyes and virtually never played for the club again.
Wow. More tragic stories here on Football Weekly Extra. Sid, that's really great to hear from you. We won't be speaking to you on Monday because we're not having a pod on Monday.
That's a terrible shame.
Well, it kind of is and it isn't, but we will be...
Is there a reason for that? You sound like you've got better places to be, Jimbo. It is and it isn't.
I might do. We will be back on Thursday. And for our season finale, perhaps you'd care to join us for that, Mr. Lowe.
I would love to, and hopefully things will be a little bit clearer with Real Madrid by then as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice one. Thanks, Sid. Guardian.co.uk/football, the place to keep up to date with all the latest news from the world of transfers. Paul Doyle, struggling to stay awake now. You don't like transfer stories, do you, Paul?
No.
No, all right then. Can I mention Gareth Barry?
Go right ahead.
All right. I mean, it's funny because they wouldn't accept... what was it? It was 18 million that Liverpool had to pay. Now they just flog him off for 12. Why is that? Because he's coming to the end of his contract?
Yeah. After his contract.
Oh, right. Well, that makes sense then. And, of course, a lot of people are saying, well, what's all this about you wanting to leave Aston Villa so you can play in the Champions League and you go to Man City?
Well, you're saying it's worth it. It's an interesting point, isn't it, that... I mean, his wages, I think it reported to be 40 grand a week. He was on at Villa. So that over a year is 2 million plus six. Was he worth £8 million last year?
Hmm.
I don't know how you quantify these things, but presumably that's a calculation that Villa did.
Tricky one. Do you understand? Do you think it's a good move for him going to Man City? Obviously for the money it is.
Yeah, I think so. City are probably, for obvious reasons, the most likely to break the top four now. So if he kind of accepted that Liverpool, if he maybe knew they'd given up on him, then...
Do you see City breaking enough. The top four this coming season, Rob?
Probably not, but it's hard to know. I mean, we just don't know how much they're
going to spend. So how long is he going to wait? I mean, he's, what, 28, is he?
Mm-hmm. He's, yeah.
29?
But given their plan, we only have a loose idea of how they're planning, but you would think they want to be in the top four within 2 years, and they have the clout to achieve it. So I think it's very, for people like him and Shea Given, who are probably going to have one shot at getting into the big four... City probably are the best club to go to, I think.
In some ways, I respect him for not just saying, I need a big four club. He's saying, I'm quite excited by the project here. Mm. Well, I mean, he's probably more excited by the money. But.
Well, some of our posters saying, you know, let's just be frank, players, you want the money, say you want the money. And I think it was Big Shutura who's asking if anyone had actually just come out and done that. And I can't think of anyone who's had a press conference with it.
Floro Maluda once said that to me. Yeah, of course I came. To England for the money.
All right.
I get paid much better here than I do at Lyon.
Yeah, Prevent Elkjær, we went to Verona in the 80s, apparently after Euro 84, just said, I'll go wherever the money is. Went to Verona and won the league in his first season.
Yeah, nice one. Very good. Excellent. Now, also on the transfer front.
Do all the players who move to Qatar and Saudi Arabia, I'm excited by the sporting challenge.
Well, they're certainly building something there, you know. The real chance to get in on the ground level and help the grassroots of Qatari football. Daniel Sturridge apparently is off to Chelsea. So there you go. Apparently
he's an excellent player, by the way. Yeah. I'm really surprised that they're letting him go. I don't know what his contract situation is, but
I believe that he has them over a barrel.
Were very high apparently, and really? Just they didn't want to pay it.
Quotes from Hughes. I have to say, I couldn't really be bothered to read this story. But I did see something Hughes saying, we had no choice over Sturridge. So.
Right. Well, you know, it's not a very interesting story, is it, Jonathan? Okay. Is there going to be a huge transfer deal that's going to eclipse this Kakar business? Because this is just day two of the transfer market.
But the Kakar thing, I mean, it's a big deal. And he's a very good player going to a massive club. But it's kind of predictable, isn't it?
It is a bit.
An outside bet might be, if Ronaldo goes to Madrid as expected, might be Robin going the other way. Ferguson tried to buy him in 04. He'll need a winger. That might be an interesting option.
All right. In the meantime, of course, Tony Adams there at Celtic, the big pot of cash to spend, but he's going to have to compete with Roberto Mancini, who is the new Sunderland manager. He's going to be pretty active on the transfer front. And I'm sure one of our posters asking if Roger Palmer, is someone going around prank calling out of work managers about vacant jobs? If they are, they're doing a pretty spectacular job about it. But you as a Sunderland fan, sorry, Jonathan, how do you feel about the fact that Mancini won't be joining, but Steve Bruce will?
I think Steve Bruce is a very sensible choice. I mean, mm-hmm. There seems to be some kind of media kind of obsession with the fact that he's a Geordie, but then so is Bob Stoker. So is Lloyd McMenemy, but let's not talk about that. I mean, it might be easy to stick to beating with if things go wrong, but I think really people won't be bothered. And the thing he does have is a track record of bringing in players from less fashionable parts of the world at lesser prices. I mean, Sunderland spent a lot of money in the last couple of years, I think 70 million over 2 years. They brought in a lot of players with Premier League experience, and they've made the squad bigger, but not necessarily better. But if you look at Bruce has brought in Zaki, Valencia, Figueroa, who I think is a great left back.
Palacios,
and even Rodrigo, I think, looks very good. I mean, that's interesting. I think in terms of transfers today, Benitez going to Birmingham for 9 million. Ecuadorian striker who's playing in Mexico at Santos Laguna, I think.
But I mean, he's so sweet of you to ask for confirmation.
He's 23, and he scored, I think, 31 goals in 58 games the last two seasons.
Right.
Yeah. I watched a game when they played Brazil.
Who, Mexico?
At Ecuador, qualifier. And he missed a few chances, but he ran them ragged. He looked a really good player.
Yeah. Oh, cool. What's his name again?
Benitez.
Christian Benitez.
Oh, there you go.
His dad was Herman Benitez, who's, as you know, is the all-time leading scorer in the Ecuadorian league.
Right. We were all mouthing along with you. All-time scorer in the Ecuadorian. Yes, Jonathan. Right, okay. What about Roberto Martinez? He's going to Wigan then. That's great to see him getting a chance at the big time.
Is he, or are they struggling with compensation?
Yeah, they were struggling with compensation.
All right. Okay. Let's just finish off part two with some posts. www.guardian.co.uk/footballweekly, the place to send us your messages and questions and that. Big Shutura felt that Sean was being mean to me in last Monday's posts. And of course he was. Sean was bang out of order, but then he made me and he can break me just as easy, as he pointed out straight after the pod. Regret the horse player says that our COD psychological profile of Ancelotti was pretty low rent and unconvincing. I wondered if I had stumbled on the junior editorial staff's weekly meeting at Match magazine. Bloody hell. Well, you know, we're going to see, regret the horse player. We suggested that he might be another Scolari, a good manager in the wrong job. And only time will tell, but your opinion's taken on board. Ooh, Roger Palmer, regarding Wandy Ramos, has any other manager been sacked twice in one season, asks Oldham's number one fan. Although I have to point out, Wandy Ramos technically wasn't sacked because he was only contracted for the those remaining games of the season. Eggs v Sinica, couldn't be bothered reading all the posts, but did somebody do the Football Weekly Extra gag? No, nobody has yet. And R-Dub 1889 explains that the splash of white vinegar, because we've all been wondering about this, in your egg poaching is to set the protein in the white. There you go. But I think we've kind of put a lid on that whole poaching business.
The yolk has worn thin.
I'm sorry?
The yolk has worn thin.
Indeed it has. That's it for part two, because there's a big wide world of qualifying matches out there to be rounded up in part three, and a top lineup of football brains to do it, so stick around.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Okay, Bosch indeed. Internationals. Well, there aren't many on my list here.
Can I just say,
yes,
as a fan of international football, I object to it coming at the end after all that guff about possible transfers and the like.
Right, that's just to keep people...
It didn't keep me interested.
Did it not?
No.
All right. Well, if you feel the same way, listener, I do apologise. But there you go. Kazakhstan are hosting England. England fans in Mankini is expected to be the highlight of the of the trip. Pretty much a one-sided affair, Jonathan. How are you on the...
Kazakhstan?
Yeah. Is it going to be an Almaty bore? Would that be? I don't know. Is that how you pronounce it?
It could be. Be honest, England games... Yes. Now that England are kind of... I mean, I think they're pretty much... assured of their right. place at the World Cup. I kind of have
5 points
to...
clear at the top of the group. Yeah. Okay. You're more interested in the game.
Ukraine. Yeah. It's got ramifications not merely in who could conceivably challenge England for the top spot in the group, but also for who could finish second in the group. And you do think if Croatia fail to win that game, what does that mean for Slaven Bilic? Given he's been linked with every managerial job going, might he? You know, there's been a suggestion. I think that he's starting to look elsewhere. He's starting to prepare the ground for when he leaves after the World Cup. I do wonder if he got offered a properly big job, whether he might be tempted out earlier.
All right. Well, Ukraine currently 3 points behind them with a game in hand. So it wouldn't be the end of their chances of qualifying in second place, but it would certainly be a significant blow.
And Croatia did get a draw in Ukraine previously. So yeah, right. they've done the hard bit there, Croatia.
Oh, all right. Like. Ireland, meanwhile, Paul, they are... away to Bulgaria, who have their big guns back. And it's a must-win game for the Bulgarians, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a must-win game for the Bulgarians, I would say. Not necessarily for the Irish. Certainly Trapattoni won't go for a win. I think he will go for a scoreless draw and maybe hope to nick something as a bonus. Bulgaria would probably start as favourites on the basis that when we played in the home match in Dublin, Bulgaria pretty much dominated. They had most of the ball. Ireland maybe without Glenn Whelan, who has emerged as a vital player in central midfield. And might be Darren Gibson who'd replace him if he is injured. But Ireland, even with Whelan, have trouble holding on to possession and creating chances. So you can't be terribly optimistic about the prospects.
Well, Italy lead the group, 2 points clear of Republic of Ireland. Bulgaria in third place are 5 points behind Ireland, but with a game in hand. How disastrous would it be if the Bulgarians won for the Irish?
Oh, well, it would certainly put the Bulgarians in pole position to finish at least runners-up, and therefore it would be quite disastrous. Ireland still have to play host to Italy, which is obviously not an easy match. And also away to Cyprus, which we've had difficulties with in the past.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be quite a tough fixture then for Trapattoni's Ireland. Meanwhile, Group 1, Sweden, who are off to a horrific start all the way down in fourth place. They are 7 points behind the leaders. They do have two games in hand on second place, Hungary, and one game in hand on first place, Denmark. who they are hosting this weekend. So that's an absolutely crucial match for Sweden. Also in that group, Portugal, who are in third place on 6 points, just like Sweden. And who are they facing? Albania. They're in Albania. Jonathan, is that a tough game for the Portuguese?
Yeah, I think at the moment, almost any game's tough for the Portuguese. They're playing so badly under Queiroz. I think there's, you know, a lot of pressure on that game. I mean, having lost at home to Denmark, 7 points behind them. But I mean, the thing with that group is, as well, it's not that they can think, oh, well, if we don't catch Denmark, we're going to finish second. Because Hungary have found, you know, at least life from somewhere, got a few good young players. I mean, I suspect they'll fall away. But, I mean, Sweden is certainly a very good side.
Right.
So I think Portugal, they really do need to win there. I think a draw's not really good enough for them.
Now, what about France's group? Because Serbia lead that 2 points ahead of France. What is the situation with France and Raymond Domenech after the defeat to Nigeria?
His popularity has plumbed new depths. The match was at Saint-Étienne and he was booed from start to finish. He said that was because of his Lyon connections. He used to play for Lyon, who are, of course, the arch rivals of Saint-Étienne. And Benzema and people like that were booed as well because of that. But, I mean, the Nigeria team, after they scored, and it wasn't a full strength Nigeria team, by the way, they were greeted by olés from the French fans. Wow. And who have completely they despise the national team at this point. And France didn't play terribly. They missed a lot of chances, but at least they created them, which is something they don't often do under Dominic. But morale is incredibly low there. There's remain problems. An obvious one is Dominic's insistence that Patrick Vieira has a future with the team. He played yesterday and didn't play well. I think in this deep lying, he sees Vieira as the man who can link defence and midfield in a dynamic way, which suggests there's something wrong with his vision. I think Samir Nasri might be worth a go in that position for them going forward.
So, okay, well, problems then for the French. Now, it's not, of course, not just the Europeans who are doing their World Cup qualifying thing. I know, Paul, you were talking excitedly about one or two African fixtures. Any crunch games going on over there?
Yeah, well, the biggest game, I'd say, is probably Egypt-Algeria.
Why?
Which is, well, it's always an intense rivalry to begin with, and there's been various problems in the past there. So much so, in fact, that the Algeria manager this week, Rabah Saadan, broke down in tears in a press conference when pleading with the government to ensure that his family are protected in the event of Algeria losing the match.
My word.
There's every chance that they will lose the match, obviously, because Egypt are a very good team. Algeria have a lot of fine players themselves. Both drew their opening matches, so it's an important fixture.
But there's a genuine threat to his family should the result not go their way.
Yeah, he seems to think so, certainly. I mean, the tensions are incredibly high there.
Right.
There's all sorts of political and social undertones to it as well.
But the flip side of that passion for Algeria when they play Egypt is that Egypt have never won in Algeria in, I think, 11 attempts. And they lost last time they played in 2004 in the Nations Cup in Tunisia, I think.
Wow. This is like Godzilla, when Godzilla took on... Who was it Godzilla took on, Rob?
I like the fact you look at me for the Godzilla question.
Right. But, you know, two colossus, and they're battling out while we mortals just stand in the street staring up.
And I'm not battling, I'm agreeing with...
Yeah, point. I know, but it's just like kind of rah, and you... Woof. Phenomenal
was
stuff.
Was that an Egypt pun, rah?
No, but I have to just tell you, listeners, all done without the aid of notes. So there you go. Now, ooh, okay, but that's very exciting. What else, Jonathan?
I thought you might like if we mention our old friend Otto Pfister.
Ah, yeah.
Where is he now? Well, he's no longer manager of Cameroon.
Yes.
Because he stepped down in protest at the fact that after Cameroon lost their opening fixture of this campaign to Togo, the government, the Minister of Sport, sacked Pfister's assistants and nominated three guys who would help him. Pfister just ignored them and went about his business as if he didn't have these assistants. When they complained to the government, and the government put pressure on Pfister, Pfister left. He walked out of a training camp in Belgium just, I think was it last week?
So Pfister's withdrawn.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah, and they have a huge game this weekend, right, against Morocco, which is very important for their qualifying.
Right, okay. Jonathan,
the thing with that game is the loser of that game, assuming that Gabon do beat Togo at home, which I guess isn't necessarily guaranteed.
No.
They suddenly find themselves 6 points behind, and that's going to be incredibly difficult to catch up.
Yeah, it's monumental mismanagement on Cameroon's behalf.
Yeah.
Rob, Been getting out much?
I'm just nodding my head happily.
Right. My word. Scary. Scary stuff.
But okay. Gabon playing very well under Alain Giresse.
Absolutely.
Not well enough for Daniel Cousin to turn up, though. Apparently, he is the captain of the national team.
And he didn't turn up?
He is withdrawn from their if you want to call it a must-win match. Right. He'd probably get away with that this weekend against Togo.
Didn't he miss their previous match?
He did, because he mislaid his passport, unfortunately. But it didn't stop them winning in Morocco, one of the best results in their history. And and now he's withdrawn from this match because he's tired after a hard season with Hull.
Fair enough.
The national team captain.
Would he have been in the team anyway, given that the kid who replaced him, the 19-year-old from
Seychelles, scored
on his debut, yeah.
Jonathan, anything else out there? I mean, probably there's some crazy game in North Korea you were mentioning before.
Yeah, North Korea v Iran on the artificial surface there.
Wow, axis of evil.
Yeah, I mean, the CIA will be taking a keen interest in that one, I'd have thought. And so shall I. That genuinely is kind of a big game in that group, because I think South Korea they've got 11 points, but they've played a game fewer than North Korea and Saudi Arabia. We both have 10. Iran have 6. So really the battle for second and third in that group is the key. And that all comes...
Is it the same thing, that only the top team goes through?
No, top two go through. Ah. Then the third place teams effectively both go through, because they play off against each other. The winner goes through, and the loser has a meaningless two-legged game, which they beat New Zealand to go through.
Oh, right, okay.
So top three go through.
Right.
But one of North Korea, Saudi Arabia and Iran is going to miss out. And North Korea have been playing very well.
Right.
And the big figure there is their centre-forward, Jong Tae-se, who has a South Korean mother, North Korean father, but was born in Nagoya in Japan, and plays for Kawasaki Frontale, but feels North Korean and goes to play for North Korea.
That's an extraordinary decision on his part.
Maybe, yeah, I think so. But I mean, I guess it just shows patriotism, you know, really does have a role.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Brazilian news. Adriano's gone missing again, apparently. He scored a goal for Flamengo, went to the party, didn't turn up the next day. Ronaldo, meanwhile, is having a bit of a thing with Corinthians because he's playing too much and is getting injured and has stopped scoring. So there you go. Just thought I'd fill you in on those two little details. We're going to take a break from you now for a whole week, listeners. I'm sorry about that. We will be back on Thursday after the dust has settled. On this round, this pre-summer round of World Cup qualifiers, we'll be reviewing some of the action and what transfers may have gone through between now and then, and having a smattering of best of the year, our favourite moments, that kind of thing, and hopefully some of your excellent posts as well. In the meantime, many, many thanks for joining us today, Rob Smythe.
Thank you.
Jonathan Wilson.
Cheers.
And Paul Doyle.
Bye.
And producer Ben. And we'll be speaking to you next week.